What up, everybody? Happy Saturday. We're live and local. It's D-Day in D.C. I am Denton Day. You can tweet me at the Denton Day with you for the next 3.5 hours before we are underway from Nats Park with the Nationals and the Brewers. We got a lot of things to get into. Toby Altizer, who does postgame on the Nats, is going to be with us in an hour. Talk a little bit about last night and how the Nationals can get a win today in the afternoon. So excited about that conversation. We might talk a little bit about horses. It is Kentucky Derby Day. I have to admit, I don't care about horses, like literally at all. But I think the names can be kind of funny.
The Puma, man. You got to go for the Puma.
The Puma. I haven't even looked at the names yet. I think I'm going to do a live reaction to the names of who is going to be
in the
Kentucky
Puma,
Derby.
It's not Puma. It's
the Puma. The Puma. Sorry. The. Like the Ohio State. It's the Puma. My bad. But we are going to start with a topic that hits a little bit close to home. Because I have to come to the grips with the reality that I cannot defend one of my favorite players as much as I would like to in the NBA. I have loved Kevin Durant for a very long time. I was pounding the table in every college debate that I would get into in the year 2016 when I was in college about getting Kevin Durant to come to Washington, D.C., getting Kevin Durant to come home. And all of the things that that would have brought, oh my God, the Wizards with Wall, Durant, and Beal, they would have been the Warriors of the East. It would have been amazing. Oh, how could we not have let that happen? Like, I wanted Durant here in 2016 as badly as anybody because he is my favorite player. And a part of that is because of the fact that he's from here. And I love seeing guys that are from the area. Like, I was not old enough for that game in the high school the high school matchup, Montrezl Christian versus Montrezl Christian when they had Durant and Gravis was in it. Ty Lawson was in it against Oak Hill when there was like 7 or 8 dudes that ended up becoming NBA players. And you knew when you were watching it, like, hey, there's a lot of guys in this game that are going to play in the NBA. I was not old enough to go and watch that game, but I've heard stories and I've loved Kevin Durant ever since. But the burner thing is becoming something that you just cannot ignore. And I played dumb for a while, man. I played dumb for a while. When it was about Russell Westbrook, I was like, hey, man, I get it. I see his side a little bit. Russ is a tough guy to play with. He plays a certain style. And if you're not going to play that style, it's just not going to work. And they gave it a good run in Oklahoma City. I never faulted Durant for going to go play with the Golden State Warriors. I would have done the same thing. You would have done the same thing. I get to go play with Steph and Klay. And Draymond, who at the time was a little bit of a loose cannon, but not nearly the loose cannon that we think of Draymond Green now, you would have given me that opportunity. I would have jumped at that. You would have jumped at that. I never faulted him for that. But the burner stuff now becoming something that has followed him from place to place to place to where last night and early this morning, we're getting reporting from The Athletic that the pride of PG County is still doing the burner bit in a way that is becoming a legitimate distraction to the Houston Rockets and potentially one of the reasons why it did not work out in 2026 in the postseason the way that it was supposed to work out. Reporting saying that around the All-Star break when the latest burner scandal from Kevin Durant came about, which featured him saying very mean things about a lot of his current teammates. I think he called Jabari Smith dumb. I think he said Alfred Sengun can't play good offense, can't play good defense. I mean, he was taking some of his teammates out back, right, and just giving them the business. But doing it with what I have understood for the past few months is literally just a bunch of randoms. He's like in this Twitter group chat with a bunch of people that he doesn't really know that well. Like, it's not like it's with his boys, right? This isn't his high school group chat with dudes that he's known for almost 30 years now, where there is a code of conduct of, hey, what happens in the group chat stays in the group chat. If you got a nice tight knit group of friends, sometimes the group chat gets a little wild, but everyone's on the understanding. Hey, this is not getting out to the public. If the public reads some of the things that are being said in this chat, we're going to be in some trouble. This wasn't that. This was Durant with a bunch of random people just talking all sorts of nonsense about his teammates. And then the Rockets and the reporting from The Athletic and Sam Amick and a few others, I know McMahon from ESPN had something similar about this, which means that multiple different reporters from multiple different outlets are not just covering this, but they are confirming and reporting on this, is that they had a meeting and they don't really know if it was addressed. They don't know if Kevin Durant took like real responsibility and real accountability for the burner situation. And like, how, bro? How? Because he got up there once this whole thing went down, right? It went down over All-Star weekend. Little bit of a break. He spoke in front of the media again. Someone asked him about it, and he said, my teammates know what it is. And I was like, buddy, everybody knows what it is at this point. We've seen the chat. Like, everybody knows what it is. But the fact that the reports are coming out after the Houston Rockets just got eliminated, that there might not have been full accountability. Like, I fully planned on starting the show when I was putting it together late last night on the atrocious second half of the Orlando Magic. And the Durant thing swallows that. Because this is a guy that is approaching the age of 40, who's one of the best players that we have ever seen. I would call him the best pure scorer of the basketball that we have ever seen. And yet the first thing that you think of when it comes to Durant and his overall legacy is the burners and the not taking accountability for the burners. I'd kind of thought he got past it because he started saying some things on his personal account. And I was like, well, if he's saying some things on his personal account, surely he doesn't need to go hide behind the fake ones to say things. You can just put your name on your real page. And I thought it was over. I thought that was it. And alas, it was not. And it just brings up so many questions because the speculation on like the injury was very, very odd. They said he got it diving for a loose ball in practice. Look, man, I'm not at Rockets practice. I've never seen Kevin Durant practice. So if I'm out of pocket, I apologize. I also haven't really seen him dive for a lot of loose balls in games. And I would very much argue, do you really want your star player in any form of practice diving for a loose ball days ahead of the NBA playoffs? Because if I was the coach, if I was the person in charge, the answer to that is a resounding no. I'd say, hey guys, even if we are going to scrimmage a little bit, we're going to take it at like 50%. Maybe we'll ratchet it up to 75%. You're still really good. That scrimmage is going to look awesome. If it's a bunch of NBA guys going 75%, it's still so much better than anything that you've ever seen at your local LA Fitness, Lifetime, wherever you ball on the weekends. It's still so much better than that. But we're not going to do anything that's going to put us in harm. So, like, I have questions about that. The fact that he came back for one game and then just did not come back the rest of the way. It's just a very, very weird scenario. And it does tie in locally because there was this report. Now, this was not a super credentialed report. But it does feel like that because of what has transpired over the last few months with Durant, that he might not want to be in Houston. Or rather, Houston might not want Durant to be in Houston. Now, he has said, I want to finish my career in Houston. But he has also said that about OKC. He also said that about Golden State. He also said that about Brooklyn. He also said that about Phoenix. He said that about every place that he is played of, I want to finish my career here, and then something transpires to where he does not finish his career at that particular location. But there was a tweet that surfaced, I think it was a week ago, about, hey, does Durant want to come play in D.C.? And I can objectively say, and I'm so proud of my growth, man, I think I should be applauded. I'm going to give myself a pat on the back. I can objectively say, no, I'm good. He's one of the best players I've ever seen. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm good. Don't need it. What they got building in Washington right now, I mean, I'm upset at the way Anthony Davis is handling things. But at least for the most part, it's forward facing. He's been honest, if nothing else. But I'm upset about the way he's handling things because what they got going on in Washington with the front office and the team they're putting together, and specifically with the guy they traded for before Anthony Davis, and Trae Young, you got guys that want to be here. Like, Trae Young loves being in D.C. from all accounts. And if you have just been around at sporting events since Trae Young got here, odds are you've seen Trae Young. I mean, this dude is around. He is outside. And that's awesome to see. He has made D.C. feel like a destination. We haven't really seen him play on the court a ton. Obviously, expectations for next year are high. But I love that a guy actually wants to be here. I don't know that I would want Kevin Durant, who rejected the idea of coming to D.C. in 2016 for what I feel are two reasons. First and foremost, I don't think he wanted to come home. And I can kind of respect that. There is a lot of things that come with playing basketball at the place where you grew up. You got a lot of people on your ass, right? People coming to you for things. I want tickets. I want money. Hey, man, come do this event that I have. And I'm not going to, I don't want you to charge me for this event. Like, because we went, you know, we had earth science class together in eighth grade. So we should be cool. Like, I can understand why he did not want to come back for the home element of this. I also kind of think potentially maybe he didn't really want to see LeBron in the run up to the finals. He wanted to see him in the finals with Golden State, which he ended up, doing. But if he didn't want it in 2016, when he was still very much in his prime, I don't want him in 2026 when he is not very much in his prime anymore. Still a great player, still a better scorer than anyone that's currently on the Wizards. But if you're talking about a team that you want to develop and become something where you can compete in the Eastern Conference, when if you look at the Eastern Conference, Boston's not very good relative to expectations. New York still has a lot of weaknesses. Eventually, Washington's going to be far better than the Knicks. Indiana will be back next year with Tyrese Haliburton, depending on how his recovery goes. So that'll be a little bit different. I don't know what the future of Philadelphia is going to be like. If they beat Boston in Game 7 tonight, you look at them with a much different lens. If they lose to Boston in Game 7 tonight, there are going to be some real questions about what Embiid's future is going to be like. So there, you run the potential of Joel Embiid not being in Philadelphia either next year or the year after that. Like, there is a lot of room for Washington to grow and develop into a team that will be perennially competing in the Eastern Conference in a way that we have not seen in 50 years, which is a crazy thing to say out loud, but it is the reality of it. We haven't seen this team be at the top of the Eastern Conference or even remotely close in 50 years. I do feel like they're trending in the right direction to get there. It's easier said than done, but the worst thing that you could do after this whole Anthony Davis saga unfolds, and who knows, maybe when we start the season, he is going to be so happy to be here and he's going to look so good in cherry blossom uniforms. Whatever, dude. We'll get to Anthony Davis coming up here. But the worst thing that you could do is then add somebody to that mix that for whatever reason, it just doesn't work. If you are a cooker, a chef, if you will, if you get down in the kitchen, sometimes you understand that, right? You could be chefing up a crazy meal and you put one ingredient into that thing that just doesn't work. Say, man, I think this might do really well with ginger. And then you put some ginger in and it's too much ginger. And then all you taste is the ginger. And you're like, I didn't want this much ginger in my dinner tonight. That's the worst thing that you can do, and Kevin Durant might end up being the ginger to this culmination.
A little too Bernard.
Exactly, right? A little too, hey, there you go, Chris. Yeah, didn't. But that could end up being, so I'm so sad, man, because I've been a staunch Durant defender for years, and now I just have to sit there, twiddle my thumbs, and be like, he just cannot get off these damn burner accounts, man. Like, he ain't got somebody to talk to. I know, we know about Kevin Durant. He said this, so like, I'm not talking out of turn here. He loves three things. He loves playing basketball. He likes smoking weed. He told David Letterman that. And he likes going on Twitter. I'd really like it if he cut out the Twitter part. Just hoop, smoke a lot of weed, and enjoy life. Those are like his two favorite things. Just do those two things and take the burner stuff out of here, and then I would be the happiest person in the world. But he cannot do that. I want him to get burnt off of the plants, not off Twitter, huh? There you go. There you go. All right. If you got thoughts on Kevin Durant, how you feel about the burners, 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. I'm Denton Day, D-Day NDC, sitting in on a Saturday on 106.7 The Fan. When we get back, we'll continue talking NBA playoffs. We got to talk about what happened last night with Orlando and Detroit, the collapse of the century for the Magic. And I think it ruined their chance at history. I'll tell you why next. This might make me a bad person, but I got so much joy seeing the Magic collapse last night. Oh my God, it was the best. So, so good. I love watching history in basketball, and missing 23 consecutive shots and scoring only 19 points in the second half and 8 points in the fourth quarter is a legitimately hilarious thing. I'm also a little bit partial to Detroit because I enjoy watching Cade Cunningham play basketball, and I'd like to see Cade Cunningham continue to play basketball in the NBA postseason. But 8 points in the fourth quarter, I mean, that was like, I used to watch, not watch, but I used to ref. My first job, like legitimate job, was a basketball official. And I would ref games. I was like probably a freshman in high school, so that makes me, what, like 13? So I'd ref.
15. You know,
like, no, I wasn't 15. I was younger. I was maybe 14, freshman in high school. But I would ref basketball games. And because I'm 14, like, I can't ref middle school games. I'm reffing elementary school games. It's like third graders and fourth graders, right? And watching the Magic last night was like watching a fourth grade basketball game where no one can hit a shot. Like, you're just praying that eventually someone's going to find a way to the basket. I mean, you're getting backboards. You're getting air balls. You're getting just the worst basketball that you've ever seen. The only difference is when you're 9 years old doing it, you kind of justify it. Like, you don't even have full control of your body in the way that you dribble. You got pro athletes, and they can't score a bucket.
How many three-second violations were you calling on those elementary kids?
We didn't have 3 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a thing that did not come into fruition until middle school because the nine-year-olds did not understand the concept of what the paint was. You're playing in gyms where there's no paint, so they just see the white lines. You're like, where's the paint? And we're like, well, it's that actually in the middle. They're like, but it's not painted. I'm like, all right, that's actually pretty smart for a nine-year-old. So I understand your theory there. But that's what watching the Magic was last night. They looked like an elementary school basketball team taking on a team that wanted to extend its series. You can't fake desperation in any postseason. I don't care what sport it is. Major League Baseball, the NHL, the NFL, and certainly not the NBA. You can't fake desperation. And I think it cost Orlando its opportunity in history. This was the game to put them away. This was the game. And you would have joined a very, very unique class. It's not an elite fraternity, but it's a special fraternity of teams that have taken down a one seed as an eight seed. And that's a really cool thing to be a part of. It would have come like a week and a half after everyone wrote you off against Charlotte because we were reading too much into the tea leaves, that you guys hated your head coach. I mean, they had everything on a silver platter. They were up at 24 early in the second half and then just blew it. And I loved every second of it. I loved it. This was a team that at the beginning of the year was projected, if you play the odds, I play the odds, I'm a degenerate. They were projected to be the third best team. They had the third best odds in the Eastern Conference to win a championship. The Orlando Magic did. And they couldn't put away the Detroit Pistons. Oh, my God. And plus, I just love Game 7s. I love Game 7s. If you like NBA basketball, Game 7 is such a treat in this sport. And a Game 7 between Cade Cunningham, who's a young superstar, and Paolo Banchero, who's a young superstar, getting that opportunity, like, Banchero's not going to shoot 4 of 20 again. That's not going to happen. And this comes a game after he went for 45. I mean, so the ups and downs, the ebbies and the flows with this is a little insane. But getting to see those two teams playing a Game 7 is going to be so much fun. It also goes back to our theory, and this is just going to be a theory throughout the entire course of the show. The East is very wide open in 2026, man. Like, once this playoffs ends and the Wizards are playing basketball again, I am licking my chops, looking at everybody in the Eastern Conference and then looking at the team that you put together, and God forbid, in a week, when they end up getting the number one overall pick, and AJ, you add AJ DeBonsta to the mix, I mean, if that doesn't get you busy downstairs, I don't know what does. Because I need some championship-level basketball in my lifetime in my city, please. So I love watching these teams that you think, oh, this team might be good, and then you watch them and you're like, they're not very good. So if my team just puts all of the pieces together in 2026, they can jump the Magic. The Wizards can wholeheartedly jump the Magic if they put the pieces together and if Anthony Davis respectfully gets his head out of his ass with this idea that he doesn't want to play here. The Wizards can very, not easily, but very plausibly potentially do the same thing to the Pistons. I know they're the one seed. I know they won 60 games. Cool. Good and well. They have not looked incredibly impressive in the postseason to the point where I think, well, this is a team that'll be able to do that on an annual basis. Now, who knows what they're going to do in the offseason? Maybe they add a couple of pieces. But I'm looking at them and I'm saying the Wizards are in striking distance of a lot of these teams so long as the offseason goes well. And by going well, if a week from tomorrow, when the ping pong balls and the dust are settled, if the Washington Wizards don't have a top three pick, we are marching on the city of New York. We are knocking down Adam Silver's office. And we just want to talk. We just want to talk. It's just us as Wizards fans. Leave the security guards in the building. We just want to talk outside. We'll be cordial. But if the Wizards don't get a top three pick and they want to do all this, like this silly fake ass song and dance about tanking and tanking being a bad thing, like we're not watching the Spurs run through the West because they tanked for a couple of years. Like we're not watching the Detroit Pistons have 60 wins because they tanked for a little bit and you get yourself a real superstar. We're going to reward the teams that are already good. Like if the Wizards do not get a top three pick and don't walk away with either DeBonsta, Caleb Wilson, who Caleb Wilson is my second favorite guy in the upcoming draft, or Darren Peterson, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. Now, there's a lot of good guys that are coming out in the NBA draft, but you want one of those three guys. If you don't get one of those three guys, we just want to talk. We just want to talk. For legal purposes, this is a joke, but we just want to talk. Anyway, I'm excited for that Game 7. You get Boston and Philadelphia tonight in Game number 7. PJ Glasser is going to be with us in about 10 minutes. He's going to help us make some money. Super sharp gambler. So you're going to make some money, get his baseball picks, get some NBA picks as well. But I do want to talk about the other basketball game that took place last night. Cleveland, Toronto. The shot heard around the country up north. We dive into it next. It's D-Day in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan.
Barnes on the move. Toss out. Barrett three. Off the heel. And in.
That was last night. R.J. Barrett's game winner against the Cavaliers. It gives us another Game 7. It's the two most beautiful words in sport, unless your name is James Harden. And then you're like, ah, damn it, I got to do another Game 7. The Cavaliers not being able to put away the Raptors is horrible because the Raptors, with all due respect, are not very good. The R.J. Barrett shot made up for what was one of the worst possessions to end the game in the fourth quarter that I think I've ever seen. Where Scottie Barnes gets the basketball in the backcourt with like 11 seconds left and takes his leisurely time before even getting across half court and then doesn't even start to get into some sort of move to get to the basket until there's like 2 seconds on the clock and he ends up passing it to someone that you don't want to have the last shot. It was the worst final possession that I've ever seen, and RJ Barrett is the hero that saves the day because of his shot. That is not Kawhi-like. It was more Tyrese Halliburton-like. I understand why everybody made the comparison to Kawhi. It's an easy comparison to make. Both played in Toronto. Shot happened in Toronto, so I get it. But the ball hitting the back of the iron and going straight up and then coming straight down is very Tyrese Halliburton in the game against New York last season. RJ Barrett just not nearly as good with the theatrics. You know, Tyrese Halliburton grew up watching pro wrestling, and RJ Barrett is from Canada, so I would hope he has some knowledge of the Hart dynasty, but he ain't got it like Tyrese Halliburton did. When Halliburton hit that shot last year, he immediately played to the crowd. He's doing the choke sign. I mean, that dude had that one in the barrel. He had that one ready to go, because if you're a pro wrestling fan, you understand the theatrics. RJ Barrett was not that. He seems like a very just like nonchalant, chill individual, kind of boring. I would have liked a more fun guy to hit the shot. I need, if you're going to hit a shot like that, I need chest beating. I need something, right? I'm pro bat flip in baseball. If you knock a ball 400 feet the opposite direction, if you want to do a cartwheel to first base, I don't care. Like, I don't want it to become the Savannah Bananas. But if you want to do a backflip, do it. I do not care. If you're hitting a ball 450 feet, you deserve to celebrate. If you're going to hit a game-winning shot the way that he did, like, he should have been streaking. Shirt off, running around, throwing it, twirling it above his head, I mean, doing all the bits, all the skits and bits, and he didn't. I'm less excited for that Game 7 than I am for the Detroit and Orlando Game 7. We're going to get those both on Sunday. For whatever reason, Toronto and Cleveland is in the main event slot at 7:30. So you get a 3:30 Game 7 on Sunday, which is Orlando and Detroit, and then a 7:30 Game 7, which is Toronto and Cleveland. I will applaud the NBA because a 3:30, 7:30 mix of Game 7s is elite. I mean, that's amazing. It's so much better than like a, here's a 6 and a 9, the way that they seem to do for most. I know it's two Eastern Conference games, but they seem to weirdly place them. I love the fact that we're getting them 3:30 and 7:30. I just would have rather had Orlando be the final one and Toronto and Cleveland be the front one. The Cleveland is just hard to watch play basketball. James Harden at this stage of his career is hard to watch. Donovan Mitchell at this stage of his career is not a lot better. He can't put away the Raptors. Are you serious? If you looked at the Raptors roster, they didn't even have Brandon Ingram yesterday. You can't put them away. They couldn't do anything. Now you got Evan Mobley's mom retweeting bad things about Donovan Mitchell. It's never good. We've seen this in D.C. It is never good when the parents start tweeting about something that is happening on the field of play, or in this case, on the court. We've seen it. Stay out of it. Once mom's Twitter fingers get out of control and you start retweeting things that are saying bad things about other people on the team, it becomes a problem. So you never like seeing that. All right, we'll shift gears a little bit here. Toby Altizer is going to be with us at 1, get his thoughts on the Nats and the Brewers game that's coming up this afternoon. Also get a little bit of his thoughts on the game that we saw played last night. We will shift into some football in the 1 o'clock hour as well. But coming up next, I'm going to make you a little bit of money. Or my friend is going to make you a little bit of money. PJ Glasser from the BetMGM Network, he's going to be with us talking picks, making you some money next on 106.7 The Fan. It's D-Day in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan. You can tweet me at the Denton Day. Let's make ourselves a little bit of money. Guy PJ Glasser, the BetMGM Network, is good enough to give us some time on a Saturday. PJ, my friend, how are you?
I'm doing good, Dan. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. So before we get into some of the games that you have your eye on today, and maybe a horse or two, I don't know if you're a horse betting guy. I have looked into no horse betting odds at all. What did you think of some of the playoff games last night, specifically with Detroit and Orlando and the collapse by the Magic?
Well, if you're somebody like me that had Magic plus 3.5, then it was pretty painful in that second half. I don't think any of us have seen anything like that. Orlando missing 27 in their last 28 shots. They scored 25 points in the second half. It was incredible. So just to watch them collapse like that. And then Cleveland and Toronto, another game where the Raptors were in control late second quarter, third quarter, and then Cleveland came back, sent it to OT, and then they had the Kawhi 2.0 shot. So those two games last night, definitely memorable. And then the Lakers, just so impressive. Obviously up 3-0 in the series. Houston's at home. They're favored. You think maybe this thing's going to go the full seven. And just from the jump, the Lakers just were all over Houston in that game. So it was a wild night of hoops, man, for sure. And I'm excited for these game sevens that we have tonight with Boston and then the two that we get tomorrow.
Yeah, it felt like last night you could tell pretty clearly LeBron was like, we're not losing. The urgency that he had in the first half was something that we had not seen in the past two games.
100%. And when we talk about like experienced Denton and superstar players, they set the tone in games like that. And again, LeBron knew the importance of last night and how he treated the game six almost as his game seven. Didn't want to extend that series any longer. And he, like you said, set the tone. LeBron, at this point in his career, it feels like at the start of these games, he likes getting his teammates involved, likes being a little bit more of a facilitator. He wants to get Reeves in a rhythm, Rui in a rhythm, Ayton, all these other guys. But it definitely felt like last night, like you said, he was hunting his shot, wanted to set the tone, and that's exactly what he did.
PJ Glasser with me here on 106.7 The Fan. I'm Denton Day at The Denton Day at PJ Glasser 9, where you can find PJ. So we got a game seven tonight. We get Philly, we get Boston. I know we're a few hours away, we're like a workday away from it. That game's going to tip off at 7:30. How are you feeling? Have you picked a side yet?
I haven't picked a side yet. I like Boston to win the game. They've gone up from a 7.5-point favorite to an 8.5-point favorite. Denny, here's the problem I'm having with this game. I think the last two games between these two teams, it really hasn't been a fluke. Like, I don't think it's come down to, oh, Boston's just missing their three-pointers, and that's why Philly's won the last two games. Defensively, Philadelphia defensively is really just throwing Boston out of sorts. Embiid, since coming back, has been very effective. And then Paul George has finally turned into the player that Philly was hoping he would when they signed him that big extension a couple summers ago. So I think you got to give the Sixers a lot of credit. They're playing really well. On the flip side, I don't know how many times, Ben, over the last 5, 6, 7 years in this Tatum, Jaylen Brown era, when it feels like Boston is in these spots, when their backs are against the wall and they need to come through elimination game or it's a big swing game in the series, it feels like that's when you get their best game. So the fact that Philly's played so well two games in a row, they're going to need to play really well again tonight for a third straight game, I think is asking a lot. And the fact that time and time again, I just feel like when Boston is in these spots, they normally show up. I'm leaning towards Boston in the game. I think they're a great money line parlay piece. So I like Boston to win, but I'm definitely interested by this game. Philly's looked really, really good the last two games. I'll be fascinated to see if they can make it three straight games.
What do you think about some of these lines just in general with Game 7? Like, it's 8.5 tonight on BetMGM. The Pistons are 8.5-point favorites tomorrow. Cleveland is 7.5 tomorrow. These feel like pretty massive lines for a Game 7, which is normally I feel like Game 7s are tighter.
Well, I agree with you, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, recently in the first round of the NBA playoffs, a lot of these series don't go the distance. We have a lot of sweeps. We have a lot of gentlemen sweeps. A lot of these series are big favorites, and it's just rare that we've gotten this much parity. I mean, the Eastern Conference, all four series went six games, and three of the four are going the distance. So I just think it's kind of an anomaly this year, Denton. I love it, the fact that there's this much parity and the fact that we're getting this many Game 7s early on in the playoffs. But you're right. And you know me, I mean, I look at this stuff and I'm like, who ruins the money line parlay, right? Because if you parlayed Boston, Detroit, and Cleveland together, it's actually plus 122. And you know a whole bunch of people are going to do that. They're just going to bet all the favorites to win the game. I kind of think it's actually going to hit, if I'm being honest with you. Like, I do think Boston, Detroit, and Cleveland are all going to win. I think if I were to pick a dog, though, that maybe were to screw it up, Denton, I think Orlando would be the play for me, because it just feels like after last night, nobody is going to want them at all, not a single person. But they've been the better team in that series. And if it wasn't for the crazy second half last night and then a 35-3 run that Detroit had in game two, I mean, Orlando might have won this series in like five games. They might have swept Detroit. So outside of just like four insane quarters of basketball, I feel like the Magic have been the better team. The fact that you're getting them at 8.5 and nobody's giving them a chance after what happened last night, that would probably be the team that I look at. But then I really just think it's going to be as easy as parlaying those teams, man. I think all the favorites are going to win.
Yeah, I might have to convince myself to actually play the Magic 8.5. I just went on this like whole soliloquy about how much I loved watching them fail. But when they were in a position like this a week and a half ago, when everyone in the world was betting Charlotte and they came out and smoked them. So that is something I feel like needs to be considered. Let's talk some baseball. We got a bunch of full slate of games today. Now, I'll start broadly. Is there anything in specific that has your attention that you either have played or you will play before first pitch?
You know, this Dodgers-Cardinals game is super intriguing. Obviously, we all know about the Dodgers, but then people that aren't paying close attention to baseball, St. Louis might be the best story in the majors right now. This is a team that a lot of people thought was going to be one of the worst in baseball. They're 19-13 right now. They've won five games in a row, and they're only like a plus 110 dog today against the Dodgers, who have lost three in a row. So I'm interested, man, to see if St. Louis can just keep this thing rolling. They're playing really good baseball, and I think they got a good chance of beating the Dodgers today. So that NL Central all five teams are above 500. All of them are playing really well, but St. Louis has definitely been a big surprise.
What is your level of interest? Obviously, you know, personally, you're an Orioles guy, but Orioles Yankees, is there a chance where maybe Baltimore could get one over in the Bronx?
possibly if they're going to. Today's probably their best shot because Bradish is on the mound. Denver just so beat up right now. Their closer, Ryan Helsley, went on the DL yesterday. Their number one starter, Trevor Rogers, went on the DL a couple days ago. Their lineup's still banged up. They're just really, really struggling. And the Yankees are on fire. So the O's are plus 145 money line. I think that's decent value. I think if you want to take Baltimore, I'd maybe look at them in the first five on the money line or on the run line because I don't trust the bullpen, especially with Helsley being hurt. That's the only way I would maybe attack the Orioles or bet them today. But I think the Yankees probably going to win again today.
So when it comes to baseball, because I think what you and I have talked about this before, I find baseball actually very easy to bet because there's so many data points that you can use to get a lean. Have we played enough games to where you feel really comfortable with that? Or like, what is the sweet spot for you to when you feel like, all right, we have played enough to where, you know, maybe a hot start or a slow start for one team is done and you're kind of starting to feel and figure out who teams really are?
I think I would give it another month. I think once we get to around Memorial Day, because that's when people start to kind of look at the wild card picture and all those sorts of things. I feel at this point it's still too early. You're really just looking at what the record of your team is, where they stand in the division. You're really not taking a peek, though, at the wild card too much. I feel like people start to do that once we hit Memorial Day, like early June. And I think that's when you have a better idea of maybe how these teams are. Because like I was saying, I mean, St. Louis is off to a good start. You know, Pittsburgh 17-16 this season. The Nationals have one of the best offenses in baseball. I don't think anybody saw that coming. So there are a lot of teams right now that are certainly playing better than they were expected. I think you can do that a month into the season, but doing that 2 weeks, I think that's when you start to realize like, oh, maybe this is sustainable. Like maybe this team isn't just a big surprise. Maybe this is what they are heading into the year. So like a team like the Mets, I think are terrible. I don't know if they're this bad, but like, I think they're bad, you know? So there are certain teams where you're like, yeah, this team just isn't very good. I think in generally though, Den, I'd probably give it another month until you can tell like if these teams are actually for real or not.
I'm glad you mentioned the Mets because that was what my next question was going to be of like, how bad do you think that they actually are? Because I think I'm in agreeance with what you just said, where they're not this bad, but I don't know that they're good enough to turn it around and make this a successful year.
Yeah, I mean, rock bottom was definitely a few weeks ago, like losing 12 games in a row. I don't know if anybody ever imagined that with the payroll that they had and the roster that they had. Like that should just never happen. So they're not that bad of a team. They're 11-21 right now. Do I think at any point this season they're going to be above 500? Probably not. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, at some point during the year they go on a 5-6 game win streak. Maybe they're 2 games below .500, 3 games below .500. The Phillies are playing much better baseball. They've won 4 in a row. Like, I think the Mets have kind of that streak in them at some point. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put them as one of the worst teams in baseball, but definitely a team I think are going to miss the playoffs and definitely a disappointing year, no doubt.
Do you have any horse bets today for the Kentucky Derby? We're talking with PJ Glasser on 106.7 The Fan. I'm Denton Day. Do you have any horse bets?
I do, Den. We're on the 18 today. Further ado, love him, and emerging market, the 15 as well. So all my horse people that I've talked to, that I've texted with, you know, who do you like? Who are the horses we're rolling with today? The most common answers I've gotten, 18 further ado, 15 emerging markets. That's who we're rolling with.
Can you explain how people get information on horses to me like I'm an idiot? Like, explain it to me like I'm 5. I do not get horse gambling at all.
Yeah, you know, they just, it all comes down to speed at the end of the day. And, you know, if you get those daily racing forms or anything like that, they have splits of how these horses have performed and how they do on certain tracks and all these sorts of things. So it's all a guessing game, obviously. But I think for the most part, what most of these people look at is the recent form coming in, how they've done in maybe some bigger stake races, and just the speed of the horses and project how they're going to do racing at Churchill Downs. I wish I had a better answer for you, Denton. I usually only bet 4 horse races a year, and this is one of those. So we're gonna pray for the 15 and the 18 and hope we win some money, and then bet some more on NBA and NHL playoffs tonight and tomorrow.
Oh, I didn't even ask about the NHL. Before I get you out of here, do you have an NHL play?
So not tonight. Flyers and Hurricanes game one. I think the Canes are going to win that series in five. I just think they're the much better team than Philly. So no bet for me tonight. Canadians Lightning though. I think the Habs are going to get it done tomorrow, Denton. I really do. I mean that series has been unbelievable. Four of the six games are going to OT. Denton, we have not had a two goal lead the entire series. The entire series has been either tied or either team's been leading by one goal. It's as close as you can possibly get. Because the Lightning are at home, because they have Vasilevsky, I think a lot of people are going to like Tampa in the game. I think Montreal is a little bit better. And in this area, we know a thing or two about winning game sevens in Tampa. So I think they're going to do the same thing. So I like the Habs tomorrow.
PJ, you're the man. Appreciate it as always, my friend. Enjoy all the games that we have at play today.
Absolutely. Den, appreciate you having me, brother.
That is PJ Glasser, good enough to make some time for us on a Saturday. You can see him on the BetMGM Network. You can find him on Twitter at PJGlasser9. Hopping on with us here on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980. When we get back, we're staying on the diamond. The Nats got a big one against the Brewers. Foster Griffin on the mound. Excited to see what he's going to do. He's been really, really good for the Nationals. To start, Toby Altsizer is going to help us decipher what could potentially be in play today for Washington. We do that next. It's D-Day in D.C. on 106.7 The Fan.